Hi, good morning, everybody. And it's a real pleasure to be here. Yes, we get another chance. And that's very exciting. And what fascinates me is that I can see that there are going to be a lot of themes which come up in the course of the morning, and a lot of them are going to be very similar. And so some of the things that David said, I'll be saying again, but just slightly differently. And so I hope that you'll enjoy it. So let's then think about old age. As Socrates said, when he was choosing death rather than exile from Athens or commitment to silence, an unexamined life is not worth living. And yes, we're in the time of examination now. So you've got to make sure that it's all worth living. Old age gives us an opportunity to look back and see the context of your living, the context of your life. And that, in many ways, is very exciting. And you can do it in lots of different ways. Okay, you can sit in your own room and look back and think, yeah, that's my context. But I find this particularly good. Old reunion. And that's a fertile ground, because the first time I really came across this when I'd retired and went up to our college reunion, there were all these enormously bright people there. And I was able to go up to them and say, well, what did you do with your life? And the answer is that people choose very different paths from the one that you think they're going to choose. These are bright people, could have come to the top of any company, could have come to the top of any academic unit. But no, many of them, in fact, didn't do that. They were happiest when they went to Devon and looked after their cows, or went into the cold north and enjoyed the snow. So, in fact, you have to keep that in mind if you come around again, that what makes you happy may not be those values which society is putting on you at that time. Next thing is you must visit old friends. Do you remember how we used to go, first of all, to marriages, and that was fun, and then to christenings, and that was fun, and then 80th birthday parties, and that's still fun. And now, of course, it's funerals more or less every day. So visit them before they go into that last phase of a funeral, and make sure you do. Think of your friends. This is a very conscious process. Think of your friends, and then go and visit them. In fact, the way that we've divided this talk, I've divided between myself and my wife. I'm doing the conscious bit, and she's doing the wisdom bit, and that's perfect. Next, visit those parts of the world that you've never seen and still want to, and do it before even your new titanium hips crumble. So I want to see the Victoria Falls. I've never seen it, and I'm dying to see the Victoria Falls. So next time we meet, I hope I will have seen the Victoria Falls and carried out what I want to do. So make a list, and go and do it, because this is your last chance. Now, accepting that you're going to die, and now I'm going into the conscious aging bit, and this actually, for me, is important, and I hope it will be for you too. So we're going to talk about death. Oh no, we're 80 and we're going to talk about death. Yes, we are. We're learning about it, so learn about it and what is involved, but you actually must know what is involved, and this means spending some time thinking about it and doing it. You must get a map of the process. Oh, come on, if you went to the Amazon, you'd have a map. And this is going to be the greatest event of your life. It'll be very short at that point. And so you might as well know what happens and do it and learn about it. Deciding on what is a good death for you and setting up what is necessary. Do you want to die in hospital? All those tubes and doctors rushing around to keep you alive? No. Do you want to die in a hospice? That's better, calm and quiet. Or would you like to die with the family if you can actually do that? So do think about that. So what is a good death for you? And do set it up. And if you go into a hospice, tell them that you want to die consciously, if that's what you want. And I'll explain why it may be a good thing. Guide your family on your favourite music for your funeral. They'll have their ideas. It's just nice if you give them a little guidance. You know, the whole of Beethoven's Fifth I like. But of course, they'll do it their way anyway. So as the prospect of death draws nearer, you need to look more closely at who you are. Now, this was a theme of David's, and it'll be a theme, I think, probably throughout it. Who are we? Who am I? Or perhaps, what am I? And this is so important. You see, it is suggested that you've never been born and will never die. Now, that is an astonishing statement. And tracing it back, there was a mysterious individual mentioned in the Old and New Testament, Melchizedek, whose scripture tells us was never born and never died. And it's been around in the Bible, and it's also in many other religions too. So what does that mean? Because if it means that we're never born and we never die, what are we afraid of? Interesting. So let's look at that a bit further. And this is where the conscious aging bit comes in. Because we have to realize that the level of consciousness that we're in is subject-object consciousness. This is one of the most practical and lower levels, lower in the sense of being most common. The subject-object consciousness is when you're a subject and you see an object. It's what we all do. Jenny Woods, she's not here. She's one of the people who doesn't do this. And the other one is non-dual consciousness. And you actually ought to understand this. And the reason I say you ought to understand this is I think that you're going to come across it in your death process. So let me just explain a little. This is where you lose your individual sense of I, and you come and join the universe in its universal values. So you don't want to die in subject-object consciousness. That's the one we're in now. That is where all our attachments and traumas are. Now, just imagine you're going to die with all your attachments. Oh, there was a lovely woman who we were with when she was dying, and she was... I think she was really protecting herself from leaving her daughter, but she came out with a statement, and who's going to look after my little car when I die? Okay, so you don't want attachments like that. You want to clear up your relationships. She should have cleared it up with her daughter and said, you know, I'm going to die. How are you feeling about this? Let's talk about it. So it's actually very important indeed. So you don't want to die in subject-object consciousness. In non-dual consciousness, we elude our egos, so we elude our sense of personal identity and attachments, and we're free to go. So that's the state that you want to be in. So I'm going to talk about just a little bit of how you might get there. Now, if you want a good description of non-dual consciousness and a way of attaining it, Sailor Bob Anderson is happy to take you there. He shows you how to find who you are. And there is his URL there, which I can let any of you have. And it's non-duality. So we're moving from subject-object consciousness into non-duality. That's what we're going to find, I think, when we die. So what does he say? Recognize the naturalness that you are. The naturalness that you are. Pure, all-pervasive, space-like, ever-experiencing, spontaneous presence awareness. Do you see, this is very wide. Failing to recognize naturalness, the unity of appearance and emptiness, delusion happens. And he would argue that we're in delusion now in subject-object consciousness. I think it's just a different form of delusion, but it's a much wider one. But in the level we're at now, delusion happens and there's a grasping or fixation on appearance. me and the other. And that, of course, is subject-object consciousness. So we're going to leave that and go into a wider form of consciousness. So how do we prepare for this? Well, clean up your life. But my life is clean. Oh, no, it's not. There are loads of attachments there. When they come up, let them go. Very important, forgive yourself. Because there have been lots of things which you may not like what you've done. Forgive yourself. Put right as far as possible those conflicts which are still active. For heaven's sake, I've seen too many people go towards death and still fighting with their family. Don't do it. Let it go. And the most important thing is don't be afraid, because fear will limit you. Be happy and welcoming about your transition. It's just worth thinking about Lester Levinson. He's an interesting guy. I think he was an engineer or something like that in the 1950s. And he noted that it is negativity that drags you down and love that brings happiness and health. His story is a simple one. He had a heart attack. In those days, you don't get heart transplants. There's nothing that they could do for him. He was sent home by his cardiologist to die. As he lay there in his bed, he thought, what brings me happiness? And that's love. And so he went through everybody in his life and sent them love. In fact, what he was doing was he was reducing his burden of negativity. This is something which we actually ought to think about, because negativity, in fact, brings attachment. So he did that. And so by remembering and clearing negativity from his life, he transformed himself. He awoke and entered full consciousness, but that's not the point. The point is that, in fact, not only entering non-dual consciousness, he healed himself. Now, you're not doing this to heal yourselves, but you are doing this to go more towards non-dual consciousness. So think about all those things, those negative things, and do forgive yourself and send love to those people who you may have injured, even if it's a long time ago. Now, if you want to look at his URL, you can do. That's his URL. It's just something for you to think about. So, we're never born and we never die, and we should get rid of attachments. So comes the question, how do we die? Well, many of you will have heard what I said. How many of you have seen that slide before? Oh, guys, how could you all have missed it? It's amazing. In which case, I'll have to point out its sheer beauty to you. Right on the left-hand side, premonitions. This is how, in some people, the death process starts. You get a premonition that you're going to die. Then you get the diagnosis, and then you go through the dying process. And some of you may have heard the BBC talk, I didn't hear it, dreams of the dying. They're not dreams, they're experiences of the dying, and there's a lot of difference between an experience and a dream. And this is, in fact, deathbed visions. In the last 3 to 4 weeks before you die, you probably meet a dead relative who comes. We used to think it was very rare. When I started this in 1993, 1994, we used to think 10% of people would meet a dead relative. It's up to 90% now that people are asking more questions. So the chances are you'll meet one of your dead relatives. And so you can ask yourself the question, who's going to meet me? Because that becomes important. Then you go on your journey and you come to terminal lucidity, where you wake up. Even if you've got Alzheimer's disease, you wake up from unconsciousness, greet your family, say goodbye to everybody, sometimes meet a relative that's there and say hi, and then you die. But it's this moving to a new reality that I want to talk about particularly today. And then you go on into death, and there are things that happen at the time of death. But we're not interested in that, or we are, but it's the new reality I want to talk about. This was, I understood it as a passive movement from where you are in the hospice into this new reality and back, and into this new reality and back again. So it's important to know what it is, what its characteristics are, because the chances are, and I give you the figure 90%, which is the latest Swedish one, Swiss one. So it's, chances are, if you die conscious, you'll do that. I think you'll probably do that anyway. So, in fact, what we're looking at is the looseness of consciousness in the process of death. Okay, so let's go on then, into moving into new realities, because it's important, and the chances are that you will come across this. What is it? Experienced by 60 or 70%, wrong, because the latest work shows 90% now. Very like the NDE world that you move into. What's an NDE world? This is the world which is described by people who have near-death experiences. It's light, love, and compassion. It is wholeness and feelings of unity. You're beginning to get the feeling of non-duality here. It's, some people describe it as a waiting area with spiritual beings or dead relatives who help you through the process. So there's a lot of help around there that you get in your transition, so it would seem. And those of you who are interested, the American Journal of Hospice and Palliative Care in 2013 by Monica Rentz, she was one of the first people who have looked at this transition most closely. And for those of you who are interested, her book, Dying, is worth reading because it will give you quite a good idea of what it's like. She argues, and I would agree because it goes with our data, that there are three phases in dying: pre-transition, transition, and post-transition. So chances are that you're all going to come across these phases, so you might as well learn what they are. Pre-transition is very much what we're like now. We feel needs, feel emotions, feel pain and joy. So we've got that component of us still present. But, of course, that brings attachments. So many fear losing control and their dignity. Okay, so as you go into the dying process, one of the things David mentioned, you may fear losing control and your dignity, and realize dying is inevitable. This actually is not as simple as it seems, because you have to come and really realize that you're dying. It's not something that other people do, it's something you guys do. So if you take that on board, it makes everything very much simpler. Now, you can understand that the blocks to transition, which keep you in pre-transition, are denial. No, I'm not dying. That means you're not dealing with it. Reactivated traumas. We all have had traumas in our life, and some of them we will reactivate at this time because they're important. Anxiety, of course. Struggle. Don't. You've got to learn that you don't struggle with this process. It's a passive moving forward, or should be, but what holds you back is attachments. Strong attachments or unresolved family distress. So clear up your family relationships particularly, and don't remain attached. And awareness of previous negative behavior is also important. You've got to love yourself, forgive yourself, and let yourself move on quite quietly. We're very lucky because we haven't done the most awful things that they're doing to each other in Aleppo. So we don't have that degree of guilt as we come up to dying. So be very gentle with yourself. And support and release, such as finding meaning, may help patients to move on. It's Monica Rentz. So think about that. Okay. Now, you've made it through pre-transition into transition. And you'll notice, and you get the feeling, loving yourself, letting it go, and go with the flow. Transition implies the loosening of ego consciousness. So you're not going to be able to do anything, because that part of you is going. Patients typically show physical signs of anxiety and struggle if they haven't let go. Some patients simply stare or restless. And then note traumas are reactivated. So if you haven't cleared up your traumas, then they may reactivate in this stage. and not let you go on. It all sounds terrible. It's not actually like that, but you have to know about it. Post-transition, spiritual opening, you've made it. The ego is not dominant anymore. You're in non-dual consciousness. Remember this feeling of non-dual consciousness where you're joining the universe, you're becoming one with what is. Patients seem to be serene in the state of being beyond anxiety, pain, or powerlessness. Most are unable to speak but can still hear, so remember that. They communicate by gestures or single words, and sometimes reconciliation occurs. So it's a time when you have made it, you've given up, and you're coming forward into the dying process. And remember, there's loads of help there. And I just got one or two quotes. Some of you will have heard these before. Suddenly, she stared intently up at the window. This is a daughter whose mother is dying. This lasted only minutes, but it seemed ages. She suddenly turned to me and said, "Please, Pauline, don't ever be afraid of dying. This is terribly important. I have seen a beautiful light, and I was going towards it. I wanted to go into that light. It was so peaceful. I really had to fight to come back." Sadly, she died the next day. Okay, very much like the near-death experience, but there is a calling, a pulling towards this more expanded state of consciousness. Such transformation experiences may be comparable to spiritual awakenings, and that's exactly right, or a patient who is accompanied has completed their journey. So this is the completion of your journey into non-dual consciousness. Here's another one from Italy. Again, in Italy, if you're hot and dying, they put a damp gauze over your face, and it's very, very helpful. And Adriana, my dear, your mother, who had died 3 years before, is helping me to break out of this disgusting body. There is so much light here, so much peace. So you've probably got a feeling now of the moving on, the giving up, the letting go. And note what they are going into. And the last one, my father was at my grandfather's bedside, and he said, "Don't worry, Leslie, I'm all right. I can see and hear the most beautiful things, and you must not worry." So he's now transited. He's now got universal consciousness. And then he quietly died, lucid to the end. So in fact, it's okay, but you have to learn to let go. And I'll just illustrate this, if I may, with Paul Robertson. Most of you know Paul Robertson, leader of the Medici Quartet, and some of you may have heard about what happened to Paul, but I think it's an extremely good example. Paul had an NDE some years before he died, and there's Paul. A really wonderful person. And we had a bargain. And the bargain was, if I died first, he'd be there at my death, and if he died, I'd be there at his death, so that I could learn what was happening. And here's his story. So this is when he got his NDE. During a half-hour operation to repair a tear in his aorta, Paul was under a general anesthetic and unconscious. His heart was stopped and his head cooled to prepare his brain for a period of brain oxygen starvation. In his book, Paul describes very clearly what he experienced while in this deeply unconscious state between life and death. Now, the question is, are near-death experiences a practice, if you like, for the dying process or not? If you're a scientist, you'll say not. If you look at the data, you're much more likely to say yes. At any rate, Paul goes on. He was, he says, fully aware that he was dying. So do note that. And moving from this state to experience of the potential unification of his consciousness with that of the universe. So here we have going into non-duality. As I lay there, and please note, waiting, I felt myself die. Beautifully, ecstatically, transcendentally. I saw eternity and shed the whole of myself joyfully in order to become unified with it. And so what I want to point out today is that this is a joyful process. If you go back to never being born and never dying, it's natural that you're returning to something you already know. And so his description of that is absolutely mind-shattering in many ways. But is it true or not? And so you can see Paul and I had lots of discussions about its truth. But at that time, why did Paul come back? And it's worth remembering this too. And that, because if you're dying like that, and it is so nice, why come back? Because the family pulled him back. And talking with the family, they agreed with this, that they, in fact, they would go in there and say, Paul, please come back, and they would play him bits that he, of his recordings and so on. And so he finally came back. And so Paul and I discussed the whole process of dying and the changes in consciousness at that time. Those of you who are interested can read his book, which is called Soundscape, A Musician's Journey Through Life and Death. And I would recommend that because you get his old age, his maturity, his coming to terms with his life. And then he actually died. And when Paul actually died, some weeks ago, his wife and family were with him. In fact, I was there. I was there in the morning. And he died later that afternoon. This time, they were prepared and encouraged him to go. Did you get that? So make sure that your relatives encourage you to go and don't try and hold you. His wife told me what happened shortly before he died. Fascinating. Paul woke up slightly from a deep sleep and told me, I must let Peter Fenwick know that there is nothing new. We've all been here before. In other words, the process which we had talked about and which he'd had in his rehearsal is in fact correct, and then he died. So I think it's a great validation of that. Now, I didn't draw your attention to the fact that birds are very common at the time of death. They come and hover on the windows. Sometimes they come into the deathbed chamber, and they sometimes, after death, they hang about. And I just tell you this story because it's interesting. And the blackbird, which is the one we're concerned with, which flew into Paul's bedroom about 4 or 5 days after death, is the symbol in our culture of the human soul and symbolizes intelligence, wisdom, and joy. Its song is said to be like that of the violin, which, of course, is very, very nice with Paul being a violinist. And if this works, and I've got a blackbird for you, but you probably all know it. And there he is singing to his friends. Okay. So that's the blackbird. And it seemed very appropriate that Paul, a few days after Paul's death, after the blackbird had been, Chica, his wife, found a feather. And there you can see the bed with the feather on it and this little patch of rippling light beside the feather. And they had to let the blackbird out because how it got in, they don't know, and it certainly couldn't get out without their help. Okay, so let's sum up then. The final transition is the crumbling of the ego, so you guys are not going to be able to do anything. So the important thing is that you learn to give up and give up gracefully. Don't be attached to things, and remember that if you were never born and never died, then this is not a problem anyway. Subject-object consciousness transforms to non-symbolic consciousness, and all is a divine unity. So you go into the divine unity. And just remember what Paul said. As I lay there waiting, I felt myself die beautifully, ecstatically, transcendentally. I saw eternity and shed the whole of myself joyfully in order to become unified with it. And that, he said, was true when he was really dying. It would seem to me that we're never born and will never die. So what are you afraid of? It's really quite a good question, isn't it? Use your old age to prepare for a good death. Now you've got your second chance. And then you can die in this ecstatic state. Okay, thanks very much.
Beautiful, Peter, and I'm so glad you brought Paul into that.
Yes.
I just reread his book a few days ago, and I'll be writing the review next week.
He's a great teacher, isn't he?
Yes, it's an
really
extraordinary
is.
Book, and the Soundscapes, and I really recommend it to all of you, and there's huge life wisdom in it.
Mm.
But one of the stories in it was when he, for some reason, he felt he had to go and visit his old violin teacher in Oxfordshire, and so he turned up unannounced. And they had a very good meeting, really kind of reconciliation, because they'd bust up in not great circumstances. And he was listening to a concert the next night, and it said this concert is in memory of the violin teacher who died that day.
Wow.
And so Paul had literally just gone there in
yes.
time.
Yes.
With this kind of prompting. And so your visit your friends is a very...
Yes.
Keep in touch with your friends as well, but visiting your friends is even better.
There is a connectedness at the time of death. We've got several accounts of people without any knowledge of why they were doing it, just like Paul, who turned up just before
yes.
death. And as in Paul's case, they weren't the greatest of friends when they broke up. And so that was put right. And in other stories we've heard, it's family rifts which are solved at that point.
That's actually been a very good collection, a sort of book collection, and book to write, actually, on this sort of forgiveness and reconciliation, and drawing on those kind of stories.
Yeah.
It would be terrific. Yes. Another project.
Another project,
yeah.
As you say.